Well, here we are, the Resurrection Weekend edition of Our Community on KRDU 1130. I guess we could retitle this week's edition Our Radio Station, since we have two employees of KRDU in studio. That would be me, Ken Adams, and him.
Why, I'm Adam J. Bernay.
Why, aren't you the Adam J. Bernay Messianic Rabbi from Beyond Salvation?
Wow, amazing that you would know that.
That's right. And in-house, don't tell anybody, but we use the initials BS for his program.
BS.
For Beyond
For a Salvation. Beautiful sound.
A beautiful sound. There you go. There you go. Well, I asked Adam to come into the studio today just, let's talk about all the stuff that happens this time of year and some different perspectives and maybe some insights that we as non-Jewish messianic believers might miss in the process.
Okay.
Sound cool?
I think it sounds cool and groovy and fun.
Cool and groovy and fun, all three rolled up together.
That's right.
Adam, of course, produces and hosts the program Beyond Salvation, which, when do you air? 7:30 Saturday morning?
Noon on Saturday.
Noon on Saturday.
8 p.m. on Saturday.
And 8 p.m. on Saturday.
And whenever else you need an extra half hour thrown in somewhere.
I think I throw you in on Sunday sometime, too.
I can feel it. I get thrown around.
Ba-da-bum. And yeah.
I hope you're editing this heavily.
No. It's going out just the way it is. Just the way it is, warts and all.
Oh, boy.
And mine and Adam's history goes back a couple of years. A few weeks ago, we commemorated the second anniversary of Beyond Salvation on KRDU. And again, we agree on the essentials of salvation. You tell me the definition. What must someone do to be saved, Adam J. Bernay?
They must believe that Yeshua, who is known in English as Jesus, was and is the promised Messiah, and that his sacrifice on the cross is the propitiation, is the covering for their sin.
That's it.
And you gotta really believe it. I mean, this is not just some kind of intellectual, oh, I believe it.
Yeah. I had that discussion with somebody on Facebook just within the last 24 hours. I said, it's not mental assent where, well, you know, I believe in the tooth fairy. I believe in the Easter bunny. No, it's basically you're putting your complete trust and confidence in.
Exactly.
That's it. And so we agree on that. That's the most important thing for all of eternity. Now, beyond salvation.
Yeah, I view salvation as a starting point on a journey with God. And you follow a path of righteousness. And that path is marked out by Torah. And it's not that...
Now, for those folks who aren't clued in, who maybe haven't heard your program much, when you keep saying Torah, break
I'm
that down.
There.
Okay.
I was about to say it.
Okay.
Torah is God's loving instruction as contained primarily in the first five books of the Bible, but really in the entire Bible. They're called commandments. It's erroneously called law, but it's not. Torah means instruction, and it's the instruction he gives us in love so that we know what we're doing.
Okay.
We're not, you know, stumbling around blindly in the dark.
Okay, it's not blind faith.
Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path, et cetera, and so forth.
Okay. Well, let's jump right in with one of the things that it's kind of a running joke around here that, and again, we have a great deal of humor around it because we know we agree on the essentials of salvation. We disagree on the somewhat less major issues. Things like I always kid around, well, it's Christmas time. Adam's going to come out with his anti-Christmas program. It's St. Patrick's Day. He's going to tell us about the evils of St. Patrick's Day. It's Easter. And again, okay.
If you've been listening to my show, you know I've done with Easter.
Adam, wouldn't even need to hear it again and know that when when some commemoration of maybe Western Christianity is being celebrated, you're going to find the evil pagan origin somewhere.
Well, yeah, and it's not to say that we shouldn't celebrate the death and resurrection of Messiah, which is what we're getting into, or the birth of Messiah.
Right.
Those are good. We should just celebrate them when they occurred in light of where they come from, what they're tied to in the religion that Jesus and his followers actually practice, which is what we would call today Judaism. Of course, that term didn't exist at the time. It was simply the way of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in this case, back to the subject at hand, Messiah was sacrificed, crucified. He was our Passover sacrifice on Passover. In fact, he died at the ninth hour, according to our accounts, which is the time of the afternoon sacrifice.
That's 3 p.m.,
That's
right?
About 3 p.m., because generally what we say to pin it down, you can't really pin it to our time, because they figured time slightly differently, but it's going to be approximately 3 p.m., because it's hours since daylight, or since sunup, or since sundown.
Yeah.
In this case, since sunup, the ninth hour, they figure sunup approximately 6, and sundown approximately 6.
Okay.
So about 3 p.m.
Okay.
The time of the afternoon sacrifice, which is when they sacrifice the Passover lamb.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so he was our Passover sacrifice. And so his crucifixion is a fulfillment. That doesn't mean it ends. It fulfills this prophetic nature of the Passover sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And then his resurrection... 3 days later. Now, we have to get into what that means, 3 days later.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably the simplest is any portion of a day is considered a day. No.
That is
wrong.
That is taught for some reason. I don't know where this started, because I have talked to Jews, both who believe in Jesus and who don't believe in Jesus, but Jews who grew up learning all of the traditions and rules and laws of Judaism. Nowhere is that taught. You don't find that in the Talmud. You don't find that in any other...
Okay, the way it's celebrated today, which again may or may not be correct, because you know we know Jesus wasn't born on December 25th, et cetera. Okay, the way it's set up today is we're recording this, it's Good Friday.
Yes.
So of course the tradition suggests he was crucified on Friday, resurrected on Sunday. Okay.
Which is not what we teach or celebrate in the Messianic community.
According to your perspective on these issues beyond salvation, when was he crucified?
Well, the way you figure that is we know he was crucified at about 3 p.m.
Right.
We have to figure out, we aren't given a day of the week, though, for the crucifixion. We are given a day of the week, sort of, for when he rose. And I say sort of because what we see is people arriving at the tomb as it's becoming the first day of the week. Your English translations will say dawning, but the Greek word literally means becoming. And the days of the week of days begin at sundown, according to Scripture. You remember in Genesis, and it was evening, and it was morning, the first day, second day, etc.
Yeah.
We also know that to be true because the women had just come from buying spices and other oils and whatnot to preserve the body.
Mm-hmm.
And in Jerusalem, while the marketplace is open Saturday night, as soon as the sun goes down, because it's a big party after Sabbath's over, they don't open on Sunday and never have, at least not Sunday morning, mainly because people are still recuperating from the big party on Saturday night.
Been there, done that.
But when they arrive, he's already resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
And the prophecies that were given by Jesus, we're given several prophecies about how long he'd be dead and one prophecy about how long he'd be in the grave. The several prophecies of how long he would be dead are that he would die and rise in 3 days, after 3 days, and on the third day. The only way all three of those can be true is if it's exactly 72 hours. Then he also said that he would be in the heart of the earth, because the sign of Jonah, you know, I will be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights.
Mm-hmm.
We know he was put into the grave just as it was becoming... You know, just the sun was going down because they were getting ready because it was the end of preparation day and the beginning of a Sabbath. And this is where people get confused with Friday. Friday is normally the preparation day before the Sabbath, but this is the festival Sabbath. We know that because it has to be 3 days earlier than the end of the Sabbath. So basically what this comes down to is he died about 3 p.m. on Wednesday, rose about 3 p.m. Saturday, or the Sabbath, and walked out of the tomb at sundown, when it's becoming the first day of the week, which is a festival. The first day of the week following the Passover celebration is a festival called the Day of the First Fruits. And remember, what is Messiah? He's the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep.
Right.
So this is all related.
So it should be Good Wednesday and Resurrection Saturday then, basically, hey?
Well, I'd say Resurrection Sabbath, but it fulfills the Sabbath. But you would also celebrate, you could celebrate it at the end of the Sabbath, or you could celebrate it on Sunday since that's part of the day that he, that he walked out of the tomb.
Did I just hear you say that we could celebrate it on Sunday? I never thought I'd hear that out of you.
Well, because it is the first day of the week in which he walked out of the tomb. In fact, it's because it starts at sundown. In fact, our celebration of the tomb opening and Yom HaBikurim, the day of the first fruits, occurs at sundown, or approximately, we started at a definitive time, 7 o'clock, on Saturday night, which is becoming, on the biblical calendar, the first day of the week.
Okay.
And we celebrate the resurrection at 3 p.m., which is our normal service time anyway.
The thing I notice, and a lot of good, well-meaning Christians, messianic, that's a misnomer. Every true believer in Christ is a messianic believer. I mean, you believe in the Messiah. That's bottom line, right?
So, you can look at it that way.
I'm a messianic former Gentile.
Yeah, and I hope that would mean that you would grow more and more in your practice to be like Jesus, who, of course, kept the Torah absolutely perfectly. And it's a journey, because I ain't there yet by any manner of means. Believe it, I won't be there until Messiah comes back and perfects this mortal flesh.
There you go. Well, that would be any honest Christian would say the same thing. You strive to hit the target, but we do sometimes fall short.
Well, the word Torah actually comes from an archery word that means to hit the target.
Okay, well, all right, we're in agreement on that. So the bottom line is, what I was starting to say is, people get so frothed up and excited over the dates and the days, and I think when people do that, they are really missing the point, the whole spirit of the whole thing, whether it's fighting about whether Christmas was on December 25th. Pretty much we know it wasn't on December 25th.
Absolutely.
And so I would think for the true believer, every day we welcome Christ into our hearts.
Let's have that discussion
every day
when it gets closer, to the fall festivals when it actually occurred.
Every day is Christmas for the born-again believer. Every day is Resurrection Saturday, Sunday day. Would you not agree with that?
Let's say every day we should celebrate our salvation in Him.
Okay.
I think that's what we should agree on.
Right, that's exactly.
Which is the entire gospel, the entire story of Him, and it wouldn't, you don't have to pin it down to...
And a lot of it is just religious traditions that have carried on, Good Friday, Resurrection Sunday, it doesn't mean anything to my trust in Christ, whether it was Wednesday or Thursday or Friday or Saturday or, December 25th.
And you know what's good about Good Friday? The anticipation is ramping up to celebrate that resurrection.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a good day.
It is a good day.
It is a good day.
Yeah,
and you know what's good about that? We can join together and say His resurrection is coming. We celebrate it. We enjoy it. It's going to happen. We're going to celebrate within 24 hours of each other. Hopefully I can teach you something about maybe the time it actually is. But you know what? As long as you're celebrating, and as long as you're not celebrating it in a way that comes out of true paganism. People, leave the bunnies, leave the Easter eggs. They're not symbolic of Him at all. But celebrate Him as your Passover lamb and that risen Savior. And there's not really much to argue about. And then wait until the day after Easter, in quotes, and get those chocolate candies on discount, because that's the time to get them.
The Peeps at half price, right?
I prefer the Cadbury eggs, personally.
Oh, okay.
stuffed chocolate.
Now you said Easter, and again, you can probably guess. Adam doesn't have a Christmas tree in his home. He doesn't go for the colored eggs and the Easter bunnies and everything.
I'm actually allergic to evergreen.
Okay.
Yeah, don't get it.
In more ways than one.
No, I mean literally. I have serious allergies. So, I don't have no Christmas trees. no eggs. You know, the only bunnies we have around are little ceramic brown ones to celebrate that it's spring. And that's only one that one of my nephews made my mom.
I mean, if I'm going to ask a rhetorical question. If God created the evergreen tree, which he did, if he created eggs, which he did, if he created bunny rabbits, which he did, I mean, wouldn't it be safe to say that the pagans somewhere along the line hijacked God's creation for their own purposes?
True, but God did not create them to celebrate these particular things.
If it gets back to the whole thing, people saying, you know, it's like, how many people worship their Christmas tree? Well, no, nobody's bowing down and doing homage. They always pull something out of the Old Testament of, you know, pulling it out of the forest and fastening it with silver.
Exactly, that's exactly what it comes from, is the Asherah pole.
And worshiping it. But, you know, that's kind of a stretch because I've never seen a Christian yet that got down and worshiped the Christmas tree.
Well, we are also told, however, not to imitate the practices of the pagans. In other words, it doesn't matter if you don't think the intent is the same. If you're imitating a pagan religious practice, God doesn't really want you to do that.
What did Paul mean, the dude who wrote 2/3 of the New Testament, when he said, all things are lawful, but not all things are profitable? What did it mean? What does it
mean?
Well,
you're taking that highly out of context,
okay,
actually.
Okay, well, put it in context for me,
Rabbi.
Well,
first off, the word things in that context is not talking about things in general. If you look at even the Greek, he's talking specifically about certain kinds of meat. And in context, what he's talking about, the all things are lawful, is a reference to meat sold in the marketplace, and it's not pork, it's legitimate meat, clean meat, that may or may not have been sacrificed to idols. That's what that passage is about, if you read it in context.
Okay, so it may or may not have been sacrificed to idols, so by that measure, wouldn't that be a religiously horrifying thing to eat meat that had been sacrificed to idols?
If you know it, yes. But in other words, what he's saying is, and the same thing is, don't look too closely. If it's legitimately meat, if it's cow or chicken or lamb or whatever, if you're selling in the marketplace, you don't have to ask them, was this sacrificed to an idol? Are you sure?
Well, then might not the same logic be applied to not looking too closely? Look, there's an egg. God created the egg. And look,
egg, but that doesn't mean you use it in the same way a pagan does. See, the point is, exactly the opposite.
Do you think there's any pagans around today that color Easter eggs and play with Easter bunnies?
Actually, I know there are. I know them.
You know, some of your best friends are pagans.
Well, you know, you do ministry, you do outreach, you live near the Tower District in Fresno, you meet people.
Ah.
I wouldn't say some of my best friends are pagans, but I do know some.
And again, a disclaimer, pagans can be found in any town, any community, any part
of
town.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, they do tend to cluster in different areas.
Sure.
Just the same way other groups do.
Yeah.
What I was saying was, to use your example, Paul is saying, don't inquire too closely as to whether or not this meat happened to have been used in a pagan sacrifice.
So don't ask, don't tell?
Sort of. But what you're doing is...
He's pointing at me.
I'm sorry. I gesture. It's a Jewish thing. What you're suggesting is, you're turning that on its head and saying, therefore, it's okay to take something that is innocent because it hasn't been used in that, it hasn't been polluted by idols, and using it in the practice in the way that the pagans used it, which by the very nature of the fact that you are imitating the practice, you're polluting it.
My perspective
and
would...
And you know there that it's polluted at that point.
My perspective would be whether you employing a Christmas tree or a colored egg or a bunny rabbit, I don't believe the vast majority of Christians would any of those would use it as a method to worship or an object of worship or to assist them in worship. I believe they're just cultural trappings along the way. If they're centered on Christ and his death and resurrection, you know, I they're not handing out eggs in the Sunday Easter service saying, this will help you feel closer to Christ by embracing the egg or the bunny.
When I grew up, I went to a church. They handed out eggs to us kids. Mm-hmm. And they said, this is a symbol of Easter. This is a symbol of Jesus. This is a symbol of the resurrection. And, you know, things seem innocent. A lot of things seem innocent. You know, but it doesn't mean that it is. You know, you see, teenagers walking down the street holding hands. You go, oh, look how innocent. Well, they may be holding hands because they've just, you know, been doing something far more intimate.
Or maybe they're holding hands and they're never going to be left alone until they're married and they won't be doing anything.
Maybe, but the point is we see a lot of things in our lives, in our society, that seem really innocent.
I think where you're probably going with it is it seems innocent and it can steer people towards paganism and away from the worship of the one true God. But it seems to me that people who drift away, and you hear the stories time and time and time again, well, I used to be a Christian, but it didn't do anything for me. Could it be that the people who wind up like that were never really believers in the first place, a la Judas?
That's not what I was going to say.
Are we having fun?
Yeah, we are. My point is this. It's not so much what you think you're doing. And it's not so much whether your faith is going to change. Again, we're discussing the issues beyond the salvation. The question is not, are you going to hell because you have an Easter egg? Obviously not. I just talked about buying Cadbury eggs after the day.
Right.
The question is, in your day-to-day practice, you know, Satan sets aside days and times and practices for himself just the way God does. Does your day-to-day practice, does God like it or dislike it? Does he honor it or dishonor it? And does it honor or dishonor God no matter what you think you're doing? Remember, the Israelites at the foot of Mount Sinai, when Moses was gone a little too long, gave their gold to Aaron, who made him a golden calf,
mm-hmm.
and when they worshipped it, they didn't say they were worshipping some pagan god. They said they were worshipping the Most High God. They used his name, and they attached it to it. God didn't say, well, your intent was okay.
But wasn't the idol, I mean, was that the first time they'd come up with the golden calf? Didn't the golden calf hearken back to pagan beliefs?
Exactly.
Okay,
so if you're taking the pagan object and calling it by a different name,
my standpoint,
God doesn't honor that. He says it's wrong.
My standpoint was they weren't having a full blown worship service of the one true God, and the golden calf happened to be at the side. No, that was the primary object of their worship.
If you take something that is inherently one thing and call it by another name, it doesn't change its nature. If you take something that is inherently based in the worship of a pagan god, whether it's front or to the side or at back, and you call it by another name, God doesn't honor the fact that, oh, you're calling it by a name for me. No. What does it say in Corinthians? It says that these people committed a sin by doing that, and they were committing idolatry. And it says, don't do anything like that. Flee from idolatry. This is the point, and I think, and again, I'm not saying anyone's going to hell for this. If your life, first off, we can get a discussion of hell and all that, but
there's only one sin that sends you to hell. So,
well, here's my point. If your day-to-day life is, you know, the way you practice is based on, is God going to take away my salvation? Then you could do anything. It doesn't matter. You could commit any sort of sin.
But that's the argument people use all the time for once saved, always saved. Well, that's just a license to sin. But the flip side of that is if God's Spirit really is living in you, you are not going to have that liberty within. You'll still sin, but it ain't going to be fun anymore.
Well,
you're not looking for a license, in other words.
You're not looking for it, but the fact is, if you don't know what defines sin, and you keep yourself ignorant of that, you're still going to be in a position where, yeah, you'll get into the kingdom, but when God talks to you about your life, he's not going to say, well done, my good and faithful servant.
Well, then...
You'll still get in the kingdom, but Matthew 5, 17 through 20 says, if you keep and teach the commandments, you will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. If you don't keep and don't teach, you'll be called least in the kingdom of heaven.
Well, can I fire this question at you, Adam?
Sure, shoot.
You said you enjoy taking advantage of the half price on the Easter candy the Monday following. Isn't that still a pagan symbol the day after Easter?
By that logic, you could never eat an egg. No.
So as long as you take advantage of the pagan symbols after Easter.
Let me ask you a question. Don't certain things mean certain things only within the context of what they're of when you're doing it? For example, you can look at the outer part of a nativity scene, and the rest of the year it's a shed.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, it's the stable.
Okay.
Things do have meaning within context.
So.
But it is the context of the day and the time of which it's set aside.
So I could go out the day after Easter, or any Christian who loves Jesus could go out and enjoy the bunny stuffed bunnies and the colored eggs and the Cadbury eggs the day after, and it would be okay.
If you're not using it to celebrate Easter, yeah. If you're just getting it because I like chocolate.
Whew.
Yet again, this is where we get into the, you know, don't worry about what's sold in the marketplace. You're not doing it as part of the context of Easter.
Yeah, well, if I had an egg in my house or I had a stuffed bunny, again, it would not be a worship aid.
It doesn't matter. You're doing it as part of Easter. If you're not doing it as part of Easter, like, for example, if you bought a candy egg when they first came out a month ago and ate it, or you buy it at discount.
But if Cadbury's intent was to market it for Easter, isn't that still a, quote, pagan thing?
No, because things have meaning within the context in which they're going. Otherwise, we couldn't say or do hardly anything, because at some point, somehow, some way, it was used by the pagans. But if you're using it as part of a ritual, and whether you think it's a ritual or not, if you're giving it on Easter as part of that celebration, you're engaging in the ritual. And I know you look at me askance, but that is the nature of imitating the practices of the nations around us.
Let's see, my perspective, as I've already made clear to you, that if you're enjoying an Easter egg at all, then, you know, it's either a pagan symbol or it's not, regardless of whether it's Easter Sunday or not.
Well, if...
Do you think you'll be using this on the internet?
Sure.
Okay.
Like I said, there is, there's a context to everything. And B, again, we're not talking about your salvation. But right. We are talking about what does God honor. And you know what? If I'm wrong, and God thinks I'm still somehow engaging in Easter, he'll let me know. And if he doesn't let me know beforehand, he'll let me know when we get to the kingdom.
As far as the KRDU version of the program goes, we're out of time. Shall we wrap up and say goodbye to the radio listeners and just continue for the benefit of the internet folks?
Sure.
I'll let you make the call. Are you tired of me yet?
Well, I do have to get home. But
oh, okay.
It's not about tired of you, but can I just say one thing quickly to the listeners?
Of course.
Please do not take anything that I have said personally. I do wish you a very joyous celebration of the resurrection of Messiah. Also, I want you to consider that what he called us to remember is not his resurrection, but his death. Take a moment this weekend, whether it's, doesn't matter when during the weekend, because we've passed the time when, kind of the anniversary of it, but take a moment to ponder the death, to ponder the sacrifice and what it really means, and ask yourself this question: how frivolous do I want to make the celebration that commemorates what he did?
Adam J. Bernay, Baked Tefillah Messianic Congregation of Fresno, and me. Thanks for the tussle. It was fun.
It was. It was great fun.
Thanks.
I hope you'll edit it.
Thanks for joining us for the Resurrection Weekend edition of our community on KRDU 1130.